give me the money, you motherfucker! Give me back my son! Son! Give me back my son! My son! Son! Give me back my son! Son! My son! Son!
Hello and welcome back to another Give Me Back My Son episode of the First Time Watchers podcast.
Because we like to watch.
My name is Tim Costa.
This is Walter Vinci.
Hermano da Silva.
Why don't you like to say, and I'm Hermano da Silva.
And I'm Hermano da Silva.
What we like to do on the FTW podcast is find a movie that none of us have seen, watch it together, and then discuss. These movies could be new, they could be old, or something that is on all of our lists of shame. And remember to email us at firsttimewatchers@gmail.com. And stay tuned to the end of this episode for other ways to contact us and to find out what we will be discussing next week. In this episode, we will be talking about the 2011 French film Sleepless Night. But before we get into that, it's time for Yay or Nay. Yay! This is the part of the show where we discuss what we have seen recently on our own. Walter.
All right, we'll start with a movie I've been dying to see for a while, which was Bernie. Starring Jack Black and Shirley MacLaine. Jack Black plays Bernie Tita, a pretty, well-known guy around Carthage, Texas. Very, prominent in the community. Does a lot of stuff for basically a big helping guy. Everyone knows who he is. He's, active in the church, active in the community. And it revolves around a murder, actually committed by Bernie Tita, which kind of surprised me because The Netflix description of the movie almost makes it sound as if it's a comedy of errors, like someone dies and it looks like it's a mistaken identity thing. But no, I looked up the actual case and this actually all happened.
Oh yeah, I remember reading it's based on a true story.
It is based on, and it's very close to the events that actually happened.
Oh, okay.
Within the story, so that kind of made me like the movie even more. So this is a yay all the way.
Now, why did you say you were very anxious to see this?
I heard a lot of good things about it from other podcasts, and they were talking about how Jack Black's performance is really fantastic, and it is. Shirley MacLaine, also fantastic. It had my attention from beginning to end. It's and Matthew McConaughey, probably in my favorite Matthew McConaughey role I've ever seen him in.
Really,
as the DA.
Huh.
From Texas. I couldn't find anything to hate about this movie.
It's funny, the IMDb plot says, in small-town Texas, the local mortician strikes up a friendship with a wealthy widow, though when he kills her, he goes to great lengths to create the illusion that she's alive.
Yeah.
Now, it's funny, because that kind of actually just reminds me of the Bobcat Goldthwait movie with Robin Williams. What's the name of that?
World's Greatest Dad.
World's Greatest Dad, thank you. Now, obviously, he doesn't go to the lengths to make people believe that the person who dies is still alive, but it's kind of the same thing of where he tries to make people believe that that person was better than what he really was.
Yeah.
And I think you might... Have you seen that movie?
I've not seen World's Greatest Dad yet.
You would like that, I think.
It's in my queue.
Yeah, I know you didn't care for his most... God Bless America.
God Bless America. I expected more out of that.
Yeah, World's Greatest Dad is actually pretty good.
Right.
But I don't know, it's just that plot that twist of twisting the viewpoint it just struck me a little familiar. Anyways, Bernie.
Sorry. is a yay all the way.
Okay.
Then the next movie I saw, which was Seven Psychopaths. My God. All right, I had talked about earlier End of Watch, but being up there for me this year.
Uh-huh.
This movie certainly leapfrogged that.
Really?
Considerably. I had such a good time in this movie. Uh-huh. That Sam Rockwell steals the show every time he shows up on camera. Just takes it away from everybody and just runs away. All the performances are fantastic. All the characters are really interesting. It's a fun movie to watch. There is a bit of a mystery to it. And revolves around the kidnapping of a dog. And there are other elements that come into the movie, which I don't want to give away on potential spoilers. But if you haven't seen this movie, go out there, because this is another yay all the way for me. It's two yays in a row.
Harry Dean Stanton's in this movie?
Oh, yeah. Everyone. It's great. You need to go see this.
I'm telling you, the trailers never struck me as funny or anything at all. I know Hermano would express interest in seeing it.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know why. Like, all of a sudden, I think it ended up being one of those movies that came out along with a lot of other releases that came out that week, and I just what came out the same week as it, I forget now, but there was like at least two other movies or three other movies that I'm like, man, I could see all of these movies. And I just started going...
Argo, maybe?
Yeah, I think Argo came out maybe the same week, and like there was something else I went to see. I think I went and see Frankenweenie. I think I don't know if that came out the same week or the week before, but I didn't, you know, I couldn't go see all these movies, so I just had to choose. And unfortunately, I was like, you know what? I think I'll just wait for that one to come out on Blu-ray.
Yeah, this movie is certainly a step up for the writer and director who also did In Bruges, which I've also seen, which I liked.
So you thought it was better than In Bruges?
I thought it was way better than In Bruges.
Hmm.
I love this movie. I want to see it again.
Well, I mean, based on the trailers, it seems like Seven Psychopaths is a little is going for the more comedic route.
It's comedic only in the interactions with other people. Like you have, Sam Rockwell's character. Basically, you have to see him you have to see this movie to really appreciate like the stuff that he does. You know, there's a whole scene where he's talking to a girl just after trying to have sex with her because he can't get it up, and he's trying to talk to her. Every time he's talking, he keeps eating cheese puffs, so he's like crunching in her ear while he's trying to talk to her.
Okay.
And stuff like that, these little tiny things, like the way the characters like interact with each other, it's awesome.
Okay, very good. So that's a yay for you.
It's a double yay, yep.
That's all you have to mention?
That's all I got this week.
Hermano.
All right, you said you wanted me to do my mystery movie first?
I do.
Okay. Starring the Hulk, Hawkeye, Captain America, Iron Man, and Black Widow, and somebody else. I rewatched The Avengers. It was the first time I had seen it since I originally saw it in the theater. And I gotta say, I didn't like it as much the second time.
What?
I think it's one of those movies that, and I kind of feel like I knew this was gonna happen, is they relied too heavily on, or not say heavily, maybe is the wrong word, but they relied a lot on comedy in the movie. And when you already know all the little one-liners and all the little, gags that, are littered throughout the entire movie, no one can deny it. Because I watched it this time and I noticed it even more. It seemed like every other line that came out of a character's mouth was supposed to be something funny. And once you've already seen it once, it doesn't hit at all for me the second. It didn't hit at all for me the second time. I still didn't like the opening of the movie. I felt like it was kind of slow and just drawn out for no good reason. I thought there was a huge lull in the middle of the movie where like not a lot was happening after that initial fight in the woods. I think the ending is still by far the best thing about the movie. I think the Hulk is still the best part of the movie as well. But overall, I think this is not for me, at least, one of those movies that's going to endure like for years to come. I don't see myself going back and being like, oh man, I want to watch The Avengers again. Because, I mean, for comparative purposes, I've watched like Batman Begins like 10 plus times. I've watched Dark Knight like 20 plus times.
You definitely have a certain taste when it comes to your superhero movies, you know?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I'm not denying that. I'm just saying that I walked out of the theater and I did like it. It did make me, there were parts that made me laugh, even though I didn't like that there was that much comedy in it.
And when we reviewed it, we all gave it very high grades, and you had given it like a B+ or something like that.
I'm pretty sure. I would have guessed that I would have given it a B+, but if I had to grade it now, I'd probably give it like a B-, because it just based on the fact that once I saw it again, I didn't feel as strongly as I did the first time. And every single time I watched The Dark Knight, I love that movie to death. I watched Batman Begins, I still love that, and I can't wait to see Dark Knight Rises again, because I have no doubt that I'm going to want to see that multiple times. But this movie, I don't know. Of course, I'm not going to say nay, but I'll say meh at best, personally, because I really, I don't know. I just don't see it like enduring. I think if people go back and watch this multiple times, they might see it, what I'm talking about.
Well, I don't know. If you consider the amount of people who's going to go rewatch it, it's a very broad movie, and it's I think appealing to a lot of different spectrums of taste, Mm-hmm. And I saw it twice in that week. Well, I saw it on Saturday and then Monday. So, I mean, and I had the same reaction each time. Well, it may have been also due to the crowd, and them seeing it for the first time.
I think the crowd definitely probably helped the initial experience. Because this time I saw it just by myself, just sitting here on my couch. And I definitely noticed it a lot more. Like, none of the gags got me, like I said. I definitely noticed all of a sudden there was a lot more like downtime where like nothing was going on. It was just a lot of talk. and like all the like Robert Downey Jr. is like a one line machine, like, you know, a one liner machine, because every single thing is like calling somebody, you know, making a reference to some other old 90s movie or something like that. And I don't know, I don't think the movie's bad, I just think it's not going to hold up for me like in years to come. I don't know what else to say about it.
Well, I'll probably disagree with you once I rewatch it again.
I'm sure you will, Tim. And then the other movie that I saw that I'm sure Tim will butt in about.
because I saw it as well.
I'm watching him write it right now.
Paranormal Activity 4. This was one of my most anticipated movies of the year because every October, one of these has come out for the past couple years, and I've loved the three previous ones. And I went in with high expectations, and I'll be honest, this one, I definitely saw a decline in the quality of the movie. Not so much the quality, but just what the other movies accomplished, I think this one fell short.
In what way?
In the way that I think this is the first one that you really needed to have seen the others. I felt like you could have seen the first one, obviously, without seeing anything. You didn't have anything else to go on, but the second one, I felt like it could have stood alone for the most part. I felt like the third one maybe started getting into that area where you needed to have seen.
Well, no, that's not true, because, I mean, the third one is a prequel. It takes place before any of the other
three. Yeah, but I mean, as far as, like, knowing who these little girls are and who they grow up to be. Like,
no, I mean, you could watch this movie as the third one as the first one, and then continue on from there, and you'd be like, oh, okay, that's fine.
Yes, technically, I'm just saying you probably would have got more out of it if you, like, it made more sense, or, like, I mean, like, knowing, like, who these little girls are after watching the first one or the second one, you just know what they grow up to be, and just having that, like, that, you know, history, I guess.
So, yeah, I saw this movie as well, and, I don't know, this is the one that really emphasizes, you definitely see there's a pattern in how they construct these movies, you know, and how there's not much going on in the first half to first two thirds of the movie. And then the last third of the movie is almost absolute chaos.
Uh-huh.
And that last third relies solely on the building of the first part of the movie, but it's just not as strong. Now, however, in each of the movies, they find a different technique to use to draw up scares and to draw up interest in trying to look everywhere on the screen to find something new.
Uh-huh.
And in this movie, there's something very unique, and I really applaud them for doing this, and it's the Xbox Kinect.
Yes.
They use the nighttime vision, and you, through that nighttime vision with the Xbox Kinect, you see dots all over the place.
Tracking dots. Yep.
So you're looking, every time that comes up on screen, you're looking in every little corner of the screen for something different, something odd, out of place.
Uh-huh.
That's a very effective thing. Just like in the third movie, they use the rotating fan as a new technique.
Yep.
This was done, I thought, very effectively as well.
No, it was definitely cool. I just felt like they went to it, like, way too many times.
Yeah.
Like, the rotating fan was used, what, like, maybe twice? Three times and
oh no
time.
No. Well,
I mean, it would cut back to it, but it wasn't nearly as many times as they cut back to the Xbox tracking dots.
I bet you it's probably around the same amount of time.
And also, it like strains believability a little bit that they left it on all night, every night. You know what I mean? Like,
well, I mean, that's just a device that I guess you don't have to turn off if it's plugged in. Anyways,
I don't know. It's a small nitpick, but I just felt like this movie just. As far as the scares went as well, like, I didn't think the scares were as creative.
Plus, there's at least two or three times a cat jumps in front of the screen to scare you.
It was one of the times that Mia actually jumped. She usually jumps at these movies, like, every little thing. And in this movie, she only jumped twice, and once was the cat. That's how little the scares were in this movie.
Yeah, even I, who am scared to death of these type of movies, wasn't that scared.
I felt like, I hope it's not, I mean, I started leaving the theater, I was like, man, I think maybe they might be running a little bit out of steam, but I hope that's not true.
Don't you think that in retrospect, that it would have been better if each of these sequels were a different family and were unrelated to the other ones? In retrospect, think about that, because
I think if they should have started this one maybe with a new family.
Well, then, I mean, I don't know about that. I think you have to start... See, I don't know, because it would just seem too jarring, too odd. I think people would go into this expecting the same family that they've seen for the past three movies, you know? And if you just start off with a new family, but I don't know, that would just...
I think that's one of the main issues I had, is like the lore or the that they're trying to build with this this woman and this kid now and stuff, and like I feel like they're stretching it too thin. Like they should have just left it the way the third one ended, because I thought going back to how it all started was a good way to end it. But now just trying to continue it on forward, it just seems so like weird, because at the end of every movie they're like, and they were never seen again. Right. Or something like that. And all of a sudden it's like, oh, here they are. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's like, dude, just end it. Like, yeah. It wouldn't be bad to start with the whole new family and start fresh.
Yeah, and, you know, remember the complaint I had with the third one is the mystery as to who and what group is behind the events?
Yeah.
You know, that comes into play again in this one, of course. Mm-hmm. It, at the very end, when you see who or what is after the girl... And you're like, really? I mean, just the whole idea of that is stupid.
The movie ends really abruptly, and I remember when it ended, someone stood up and was just like, "Are you freaking serious?" I got the same exact reaction when I originally went to see Blair Witch Blair Witch Activity. Mesh these two movies together. But I remember something when it ended. It ends abruptly, that movie as well, and. Remember some girl getting up and just screaming "fuck you" and flipping the theater screen off and just walking out, and I was just like, I don't know, I didn't have as much fun with this one. I felt like, I don't think it's horrible. I'll still recommend it, especially if you've seen the other ones, if you know, you're interested in seeing the continuation of the story. But I definitely feel like it was a step back as compared to the others for me.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I'd have to give it a nay, because it's just. Not as scary, and it, like I said, it follows the same beats as all the other ones, you know, and it's just, I mean, there are a few moments in there that are pretty cool, you know, like the neck snap.
Yeah, but that's been done
already. Yeah, exactly, it's been done, but only so many times you can have that girl Katie in this movie walk around like a zombie, you know, really slowly.
I thought the coolest stuff happened towards the end when they're, you know... It's not too much. I don't think it's a spoiler. Someone's being chased through a house.
Right.
And the house, you know, someone's being dragged through a house as well.
Yeah.
I thought that stuff was cool. I thought the Xbox thing was cool. I thought they should have used it a little less, because they used it, like, pretty much the whole middle of the movie and towards the end as well. And, I mean, the effects that they did do with it looked pretty cool, but you were complaining about the kids in the third one. I thought the kids in this one were far worse.
No,
the
not at boys, all.
Oh, I didn't like the two boys in this movie at all.
Oh, no.
One of them barely even talked.
Yeah.
And just looked like... creepy kid, and then the other one, when he did talk, he was supposed to be creepy, and he came off as just a weird.
And that's probably why I didn't have as much of a problem with them as the third one, because in the third one the two young girls had to act, had to talk, and I found them completely
that's why
unbelievable.
I thought they were more just, they had more to do, and they just were better overall. Like and the scenes featuring them, like with the girls being antagonized and stuff, were far better than this one.
I disagree. Next. So no, what do you say? Yay, nay, or meh?
Yeah, I still recommend it. I mean, Jesus. I'm not going to say meh, because, I mean, I still don't think it's horrible. I just think it's a step back, and it's not a huge step back.
Well, a lot of people disagree with you. User rating IMDb, 4.7.
I think the last three have been like that.
Okay.
I think the first one is the only one that's got like 80% or something like that, and all the others are like 50 or 40. Don't care. Still like it.
You gonna go see number 5 next year?
Yep.
Are you gonna see the Latino spinoff?
Perhaps.
Oh boy.
Paranormal Activity 5, is that what we're gonna call it?
No, it's gonna be like a reinvention starting from the beginning, but it's for the Latin American audience.
I'm thinking of like the whole like Eddie Murphy like joke about like why black people don't live in haunted houses. He's like, what a beautiful house.
Get out. Okay, I'm out of here.
Too bad we can't stay. We're gonna be 5 minutes long.
That's all you have to say, Romano?
That's it for me.
Okay. Obviously, I already talked about Paranormal Activity 4. And the other movie I got to see was A Simple Plan. Now, I have never seen this movie before. This came out in 1998. Somehow, it has escaped my clutches. I don't know how, because I remember the trailers when it was released. I was like, holy shit, I want to see that movie. That looks really awesome. Remember the reviews that came out? It was really well reviewed. But for somehow, some way, the last 14 years, it has escaped me. I finally saw it, and holy shit, what a great movie. Have the two of you seen this?
I have not seen it probably since it was released.
Remind me, what's it about? It sounds familiar.
When three blue-collar acquaintances come across millions of dollars in lost cash, they make a plan to keep their find from the authorities, but find complications and mistrust weaving its way into their plan. Stars Billy Bob Thornton and Bill Paxton and Bridget Fonda. Directed by Sam Raimi.
No, I don't think I've seen this.
Holy crap.
I don't think so.
Holy crap. Does the poster give you a reminder at all? No?
Oh, wait. I did see this.
Yeah.
I remember just looking at Billy Bob Thornton, I'm like, yes, I've seen a movie where he looks like that.
Okay, yeah. So they find a plane that's crashed and...
Yeah, yeah. Is it set in the winter?
Yes.
Yes, I've seen
okay.
it.
Okay, okay. Yeah, this movie is amazing. And it relies solely on the tension of between these three friends and what they're going to do with this cash. And you know, because they decide to hold on to it for a while until the authorities, you know, move on, you know. But it's just relies solely on human greed and paranoia, and it's so amazing. It's just interwoven. So it's so simple too, you know, in how it's told. And I don't know. I really enjoy this movie, and it really. I was really struck because I went to look back on Sam Raimi's directing biography, and of course I've said before that, you know, Spider-Man 2 I think is one of the best superhero movies I've ever seen.
Yep.
And of course I love the first one as well. So I looked back at his movies before those Spider-Man movies, and of course there's The Evil Dead and The Evil Dead 2, and then after that it's Darkman.
Yep.
And Army of Darkness,
yep.
And The Quick and the Dead,
yep.
And then A Simple Plan. And then there's two movies after that, For the Love of the Game and The Gift. And then there's the Spider-Man movies. So with those two, the first two Spider-Man movies, of course we don't count the third one, that one's never existed.
Yeah. I'm sure he did, it would have been.
you can definitely see now his progression as a filmmaker and as a storyteller and how he put all of those elements that he had in his whole biography beforehand into those two movies. Because you see elements of all those movies in the Spider-Man movies. You know, especially from The Evil Dead and A Simple Plan. You know, there's a lot of, you know, raw human pathos in those Spider-Man movies, which she definitely was able to show in The Simple Plan, and also The Gift. Did you guys ever see The Gift?
Not seen The Gift.
No.
Oh, that's really good. It's surprisingly good. Plus, you get to see
Katie Holmes.
Yeah. Anyways, A Simple Plan. It's really, really, really awesome.
So it sounds like a yay.
Oh, is that what it sounds like?
Yep.
Really? Are you sure? It's so tense, and you really are left wondering what's gonna happen, you know, at the end. I will say that the very end itself, there's a voiceover in the beginning and the end, which I just don't think is very necessary. I think you could have done a lot more by just showing me and not having the narrator there. So that's a yay for A Simple Plan. All right. Now let's move on into Trailer Hitches. This gives us an opportunity to mention a trailer that either gets us on board for an upcoming movie or makes us want a bitch. Walter.
All right, the first thing I'm going to talk about is not really a trailer so much as I saw a little featurette on YouTube of Mad Max Fury Road. Tom Hardy's going to be in this movie.
And Charlize Theron.
I'm already sold. I saw I want to see what they're going to do with this. The featurette is basically just shots, like a slideshow of the different cars that are going to be used in the movie or appear in the movie. One of them is a flatbed trailer covered in spikes with a backhoe chained to the back of it. Don't know what they're going to use it for, but I'm dying to find out. Mad Max is one of those movies that I remember watching as a kid and loving. It's one of my favorite, you know, my favorite all-time movies that we talked about it on the one of our prior episodes where I mentioned Mad Max. It's also the basis for The Bellflower. And yeah, it, I'm intrigued at the very least. I can't wait to see an actual full trailer for this.
You know who's directing it?
I didn't catch the director.
George Miller.
I'm good. This is going to be awesome.
Yeah, Tom Hardy as the cast, and of course, I'll see just about anything that Tom Hardy's in.
Exactly, and yeah. I just can't wait. I want to see more of this as it develops.
Rosie Huntington-Whiteley is in this. She was the girl in Transformers 3.
No, but either way, they can make it, as long as she's not pretty, that's all I care about. I don't want anything to look nice.
That's true.
So which brings me to which. Speaking of technology and trucks and all that, it's going to bring me to my actual trailer hitch, which is Iron Man 3! Will you get to see... why is his name escaping me now?
Robert Downey Jr.?
Tony Stark? Sir Kingsley. Ben Kingsley as the Mandarin. Doing the voiceover for most of the trailer. Iron Man's got a new suit of armor. And basically, it looks like a fall from grace story. And it struck me very, very Dark Knight Rises. It looks like the Mandarin, you know, targets Tony Stark and, like, blows up his house at one point. And, you know, there's the Iron Patriots, which are also shown, in the trailer as well. I'm certainly on board. It looks like it could potentially be probably the best Iron Man of the bunch from what I've seen so far. It doesn't look like the Iron Man you'd expect.
You have to admit, it's pretty tough to judge a movie based on a short teaser trailer.
Well, it's not really. This trailer was like 2 minutes long.
Or a regular trailer, either way.
But it was enough elements in it to get me to jump on board. So
even if you didn't see the trailer, wouldn't you just jump on board?
Not necessarily. With the Lord of the Rings, I was like, Lord of the Rings. I've only seen the first two. My interest kind of waned after that. You know, it dropped off considerably. So yeah, you can shake your head all you want. But this, I'm hitching my trailer onto to Iron Man 3 because I am certainly intrigued. And Ben Kingsley looks awesome as the Mandarin. He looks just like he walked in the comic.
They show
page.
A good portion
of
him.
You actually see the Mandarin with all of his rings, and you see his face with the makeup on. It looks great.
Yeah, Guy Pearce is in this movie as well as Aldrich Killian. Does he sound familiar?
Doesn't
that sound
familiar to me from the comics? So, I mean, but the Iron Man comics span far and wide, so
very good. Hermano.
All right, I saw the trailer for the Evil Dead remake, and this is another one of those trailers, like I said last week with Carrie, where I first heard that they were remaking the Evil Dead, and I was like, come on, man, really? Like, why? Like, that movie's already a classic, you don't touch classics. But, like Carrie, I saw the trailer, and I'm like, wow, this actually looks kind of good. got some of the, you know, the things that Sam Raimi's known for. In the trailer, you see a lot of the POV shots of people running through the woods. And, you know, you see the... anybody who's seen the Evil Dead, the original one, they know...
The tree is still in this thing?
The tree rape scene looks like it's going to be in the remake, which I was kind of glad... Not in a weird way. I like it when they stick to the original, and the original did have that, and I know that it's kind of one of the iconic scenes from the original, so I'm glad they, you know, they chose to keep it in and not, you know, just, you know, bow down to, like, you know, ratings or anything like that. Otherwise, it looks like they still kind of got, like, a grimy look to the movie, but obviously it's not as low-budget looking as the original was. I mean, I know the original is known as a classic, but if you really go back and watch the original, I mean, the acting in it is pretty atrocious, even by Bruce Campbell.
So, I have to admit, all three of the original Evil Deads are, admittedly, I have to admit, they're on my list of shame, because I've never seen the entirety of all of them.
Wow. I have a trilogy, Tim, if you ever want to borrow it.
I've seen bits and pieces, especially the Army of Darkness one, where I'm like, meh.
Oh, the Army of Darkness is so good.
Army of Darkness is awesome.
Yeah, I've seen good portions of that, especially when he goes back and he's with the villagers and he goes into that pit and there's the witch. And I'm like, oh, this is boring.
Oh, Tim.
Oh, my God.
You need to watch forward when other things happen.
Anyways, I'm sorry.
Anyways, I mean, it looks really, really gory. Even, I'd almost say more gory than the original. So it's going to have something for horror fans, definitely. And, I honestly don't think it looks that terrible, but yet again, it's just a trailer. We'll see, you know, when the movie comes out, but I'm going to say yay for now.
You mean or hitch.
I'm going to hitch and say yay.
Very good. Well, before Paranormal Activity 4, I saw the trailer for another horror movie called Mama. And the plot goes, Annabelle and Lucas are faced with the challenge of raising his young nieces after that were left alone in the forest for 5 years. But how alone were they? And in the trailer, you see a lot of darkness. It's a very gloomy-looking trailer. And you see these two creepy kids that are, you know, maybe like 4 and 7, I would guess. And they're always kind of skulking about the house by themselves, talking to one another, or it seems like they're talking to somebody else that's not in the room, you know? And, you know, there's, of course, certain jump scares in the trailer and some weird things happening. It looks like somebody crawls up onto the top of a ceiling, you know? It's supposed to look creepy. But, I mean, it looks... See, so there's these types of horror movies that have come out within the past 10 years or so that follow these same kind of patterns. You know what? I think, actually, it's after the J-horror remakes of The Ring and The Grudge that they started to develop American movies or tried to develop original American movies that had the same kind of vibe and tone as those movies. And now they all seem to kind of blend together between this and Insidious and Sinister. Well, I admit, I saw Insidious and that was pretty good. They all seem to have the same tone, the same vibe, you know. I honestly, if you intercut this with the trailer for Sinister, I don't think I'd be able to tell the difference, because they look like they have the same sepia tone and gloomy look, and I don't know. It just doesn't look very original to me, and I'm not that sold on many horror movies anyways, you know. So I'd have to bitch about this trailer.
Whoa. I actually saw this trailer as well before Paranormal Activity 4, and the thing that gave me a little bit of hope right away is that Jessica Chastain is the lead.
Yeah, okay.
And she's a great actress. I don't think she would take a role that was beneath her.
Oh, that's not true. Why would you say that about anybody, any actor or actress?
Well, look at the movies that she's done. Just to start off, she did Tree of Life. She did The Storm one.
Take Shelter.
She did Take Shelter.
She was in Lawless.
Lawless. She does all these like smaller movies, relatively smaller. And I don't think that she would just take a movie with a shitty script just for a paycheck. I mean, that could only hurt her career, especially starting out. So it gives me a little hope as far as the quality of the movie. I know the male lead looks like it's the actor that plays Jaime Lannister on Game of Thrones.
Okay.
And, I mean, he's a good actor on Game of Thrones, so that's two good actors right there.
Well, she was a voice on the Madagascar 3.
Yeah.
Isn't that taking a paycheck?
Anybody that does voice acting takes a paycheck.
Right, then.
Does it for the paycheck. I don't know. I didn't think this movie looked that terrible. I do definitely agree with you that a lot of the American horror movie trailers are cut pretty much exactly the same. And it's unfortunate, but I don't think that you should automatically dismiss it because of that. I mean, I think the final shot of the trailer was, I thought it was pretty cool. Really? And it sets up maybe a factor of the movie that, you know, kind of like, you know, you don't say, you know, Beetlejuice's name 3 times or he comes or you know what I mean? Or like, you know, it sets up some kind of like legend like that. Okay. And I kind of like that. And I didn't think it was that bad. I wouldn't completely bitch about it.
But I am.
Oh, anyways. Well.
okay. Oh, that's right. There's one other thing I wanted to talk about before we move on. And that's just a rumor. A rumor for Transformers 4.
It's in production, from what I understand.
Well, yeah. But, Michael Bay still has to finish his movie Pain and Gain. His small little movie before he moves on to bigger and better things, which is Transformers 4. But there's a rumor of a casting. And that's Mark Wahlberg being cast in this movie.
As? Please tell me it's like Megatron.
No, I don't know.
Because at that point, no, that's all I need.
he's supposedly just going to be another, just a human actor. And this reeks to me of the same terrible casting rumor as him as Nathan Drake in Uncharted. Does anybody see Mark Wahlberg as an outright action star? No, I mean, no. If he's going to be in action, it would be in just another, you know, cop movie or something like that, where there'd be a shootout or something, you know.
Yeah.
But as an outright action star, I think he would be a terrible choice.
Yeah, I can't see it. Like, hey, what's going on, Miss Prime? Just say hi to your mother for me. Hey, you in a crowd? You want to eat planets? I just want to talk. Just say hi to your mother for me.
Yeah, he's a fine actor. If he's going to play a tough guy, I mean, that's fine. But I mean, not in this movie. It's just I don't see him being able to pull it off. Plus, Michael Bay's back anyway, so it doesn't even fucking matter.
Yeah, exactly.
I think Mark Wahlberg's completely fine in the right role. I think sometimes he gets caught in what, like we were talking about last week with Jason Statham, how he just kind of does the same movie over and over. And I know Wally loves them, and I'm not faulting him for doing that, because obviously he's getting paid millions of dollars. Why not? But I think Mark Wahlberg sometimes does the same thing, where he'll take these Jason, not as an insult, I don't say this as an insult, he takes these like Jason Statham level movies where, like, what's the last one that came out with, like, Contraband? And even, yeah. Like, I mean, even to an extent, the M. Night Shyamalan one, The Happening.
I still haven't seen that one.
Yeah, dude, you need to see it.
It's like, why does he do these movies? And then every once in a while, we get like a Boogie Nights or something out of him. You know what I mean? Like something of that caliber.
Or The Departed.
Well, I didn't like The Departed, but I recognize that he was good in it. You know what I mean? Like compared to The Happening, he was fucking Oscar worthy in it. So
I mean, hear he's really funny in Ted.
Oh, he's hilarious in Ted.
Yeah, I haven't seen Ted.
But I mean, I'm just picture him. I just picture Mark Wahlberg with this worried look on his face. We gotta get the hell out of here. The Decepticons are attacking.
It just seems weird that he would even do it. Like, I know he's in Michael Bay's new movie. Maybe Michael Bay, you know, went up to him and asked him, like, "Hey, man, you know, you thinking you might want to be in this movie?" But it's weird that they would even go with someone like Mark Wahlberg and not go with like a younger actor to get that,
you know,
like, teenage audience.
Earlier on, you know, when there were still rumors about this movie in development, Jason Statham was rumored to be in this, and that would be awesome.
That would be awesome, because then he could fight Megatron one-on-one.
That would be kind of... I wouldn't be surprised, actually, because that girl that you guys mentioned, I think that's his girlfriend in real life.
Oh, really?
Yeah, Rosie...
Hold on, Miss Prime, I got this. Come on, Megatron, let's go.
Yeah, but it's just weird, because look at, like, even, like, Shia LaBeouf and, like, Megan Fox, they're, like, younger. They're, like, what, mid-20s? Like, why would they go with somebody that's, like, what, pushing 40?
Yeah, well...
You know what I mean? Whatever. Like,
maybe he's just going to be another military person. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, we're talking about it, but, I mean, he could just be, like, some random adult in it.
He could,
like,
be Sam's older brother, Spike.
Oh, boy.
Oh, can you imagine they went?
I could so see them doing that too, because the dad would be the right age. You know, he's working somewhere. I could certainly see that, and I could also see Michael Bay wanting to try to bring in some sort of weird that transformable suit that Sam wears later on. I can see this now.
Nah, man. I mean,
I'm having a vision of the apocalypse.
I don't see it, man. I mean, I haven't even seen the third one. I've pretty much given up on the
series. Somehow they have to bring in Unicron. You know, Unicron, I mean, that is the ultimate thing that I've always wanted to see in a live-action movie, Unicron.
But they're going out, it's going to be a little transformable horse with a single horn in the middle of its head. And they'll be like, Unicron!
Oh, that's funny. So, on that little bit of news, and I'm going to bitch plants. As well.
Just open his mouth and things just... Oh my god! That's funny. Someone stop that little pony!
Okay, let's move on. And let's talk about Sleepless Night. The plot. A cop with a connection to the criminal underworld finds his secret life exposed when he and his partner are caught stealing cocaine from a powerful drug dealer, a move that puts his son's life in jeopardy.
What? This is not a movie about vampires from 2002? About Lord Malgard transforming this guy's named Christian Grey's wife into a vampire, and then he has to go and find her with the help of some vampire hunters? Not the same thing?
I am going to die laughing if Wally watched the wrong movie.
That would be pretty funny if he did.
Sleepless Nights 2002, hold on. I
Oh my god, you watched the wrong movie?
Sleepless Nights, hold on.
No, Sleepless Nights.
Sleepless Nights is what I...
Night with no S.
Well, this has an S.
No, it's not it. Holy those shit.
Those lips at your throat may not be your lover's. Starring Jacqueline Anderson, Adrian Alvarado, Richard Ryan, Gil Lopez Jr.
This is karma. Because I told you, Tim. I told you we should not be doing this movie.
I'm fucking with you both.
Oh, dude.
I actually watched both.
Oh, You watched both? Why? Because you weren't sure which one?
No, I knew which one we were going to watch. I just wanted to screw with you guys.
Dude. It's pretty good.
To see what you guys are doing in the middle of the podcast, I decided to describe it like something completely different.
Dude, I hate you so much.
Okay, Tim, carry on.
Well done.
Thank you.
Well done. The writer and director, Frederick Hardin. The actors, Tomer Sizely, Serge Riaboukine, I guess, hopefully, I'm sorry, and Julien Beausoleil. Hermano.
Sir.
During our review of Clown a couple of weeks ago, you had heaped much praise upon Asian and European films for stretching the boundaries of conventional Hollywood cinema. And, you know, because they are typically different from what we are used to.
Yes.
Would you give Sleepless Night the same type of praise?
No. Initially, I think the rest of us had heard good reviews on people that had seen it through other podcasts or various other means. So I said, you know what? I'll put this on my list of movies that I'll check out when they're released here. And I finally got to see it, and I don't know if it was hype or just the fact that I was in a bad mood that day, but watching this as it opened, I was like, I like the opening. And then after the opening, it did the equivalent of a dive off a cliff. It just went straight down. It didn't even peter out. The movie completely lost me. Did you give the synopsis?
I did before. Well, hopefully Wally did not confuse everybody else, but I'll go back and read the plot. A cop with a connection to the criminal underworld finds his secret life exposed when he and his partner are caught stealing cocaine from a powerful drug dealer, a move that puts his son's life in jeopardy.
Okay. I like the way the movie opens, but after that, the movie pretty much, I can describe it in like one sentence. It's a giant game of hide and seek. That's all it really was to me, because the rest of the movie takes place in this nightclub, and there's a lot of, you know, elements at play. Like, he's got, you know, he's a dirty cop, obviously. He's got these other cops who are also dirty on his tail. He's got the mobster who owns the club that is pissed off with him. And then he's also got a partner that's trying to, like, you know, backstab him and betray him. And there's all these elements going on. And I don't think any of them mesh particularly well. I didn't like pretty much any character in this movie I did not like. I didn't like the main actor. I didn't think he was very likable. I didn't care about his relationship with his son because it's not set up well in the movie. I mean, you're given one breakfast scene with his son and all of a sudden you're supposed to care. And I really didn't. And this guy is just straight up a bad guy. Like, he's not trying to, like, redeem himself throughout the movie and, like, be like, I'm going to be a good person now. I'm going to change my ways. It's never, you know, set forth that he's going to do that. By the end of the movie, I don't feel like there's any kind of arc. I feel like he just was the same person throughout. And I thought this movie, even though it's only an hour and 43 minutes, I felt like this movie could have been like an 80-minute movie easily and told a way tighter and better story. The end.
Walter?
No, I really like this movie, actually. It had me from the very beginning to the very end. I wanted to know what was going to happen next. Like, what are you going to do next? What are you going to do now? And following this guy around as he's, you know, trying to think his way through the situation that he's basically put himself into. He's screwed himself at the very beginning of the movie with what he pulls off stealing those drugs, and then him trying to basically fix it as the movie goes along. I was every step of the way. I was like, all right, now what would I do now? Like, this guy's coming up with a plan. I mean, I don't know if it's a spoiler or not. So I mean, I won't mention like some of the plans. Like, there was only like one part of the plan. I was like, well, obviously, this, you know, this place has this, then wouldn't somebody expect to see this happen, you know? But it had my attention from the very beginning to the very end. I wanted to know what was going to happen to these characters. I wanted to see where the next turn was going to be. It was like kind of being like on a really like a fun roller coaster, where you're not exactly scared, but you're like, oh, what's going to happen next? Oh, we're going left. All right, now we're gonna go this way. So I had a great time this whole movie.
Hermano, you know, earlier today I had asked you, because this movie was released in Europe in 2011, but it got the American release in 2012, because it was released here in April.
Now, does this qualify for our top 10?
That's what I was just going to... I had asked him, would you say that this movie is a 2012 release? And he agreed with me, saying yes, it was released in the US in 2012, so yes. So this movie is easily in my top three of the year so far.
Really?
It is awesome. It's one of the best thrillers I have ever seen. It is amazing because you're tense. Just like you said, well, you're tense from beginning to end. And now I agree with you. I was on board immediately, Hermano, from the very beginning. Because that opening scene of the robbery scene on broad daylight in the streets, is awesome. I thought it was so thrilling. And the stakes are immediately set so high because you see one guy get away and another guy chasing him and you're like, well, what does that really mean? And you see that they're really worked up about this and you don't know why I should care about these people or why I should care about what happened until a few minutes later you see that they're crooked cops. You're like, oh my God, that was something I didn't see coming. And the great thing about this movie is everything you need to know about these people are shown to you in the first 10 minutes. That's everything that you need for the rest of the movie is given to you in those first 10 minutes. And I thought it was beautifully told. Now, you said, Hermano, that you thought it was poorly set up with his relationship with his kid.
Yes.
I thought it was greatly set up because you see that the kid doesn't care about his father, but you see that his father truly does care. His name is Vincent. He truly does care about his son, and he's trying to connect with him. But he's just a typical teenager from a broken family that is divided.
I have to stay at my dad's house this weekend.
Right,
great.
Right, right. And I think the leads do a great job of acting. I love the guy who plays the chief investigator who comes along later in the movie. He's played by Julien Beausoleil. And he's trying to capture the main character, Vincent. I thought he did a great job, you know, as this foil. And throughout the whole movie, I don't think you ever truly know where, especially Vincent, where people's motivations truly lie. Vincent being the most with this case, because throughout the whole movie, I didn't know if he was really a crooked cop. And later on, there's a twist and you're like, oh, wait a minute. Well, is what he's telling, is that true or is it not? You know, or is he just trying to get out of a situation? Hermano, again, you said it just seemed like a big game of hide and seek.
Yes.
I thought it was executed beautifully because the one spot location is used well. I think the director really gives you a sense of the geography of the club, and you never get lost as it follows all the main characters around. You really know where he is at every single time in the club, you know? I loved it.
I don't know. I mean, I think they went like to the well way too many times. Like, how many times do we have to see him just pushing through people and like ducking down when he sees somebody he's trying to hide from? They must have done that like easily 10 to 15 times.
But, well, no, that's hyperbole. Because in the scenes that it matters, where he's trying to hide from somebody, in crowded scenes, it's different. It's a different location every time. It's the dance floor. It's the upper level of the dance floor.
What does the location matter? The situation is always the same. He's running through a group of people. He sees somebody he's trying to hide from. He ducks under a table, or he hides behind some people. He grabs a girl, pretends he's dancing with her or kissing her or whatever. I mean, he did that over and over and over, and I'm like, holy shit, man. They're trying to do the cat and mouse thing, but all they're doing is playing hide and seek.
Yeah.
It wasn't thrilling to me at all.
Oh, I disagree with you. You really must have been in a bad mood watching
this. I wasn't. Like, I was in a perfectly fine mood, because the movie, like I said, it opened up. I loved the way it opened up. I'm like, oh, man, I think I'm really going to like this movie. I like the chase down the street with the guy with the shotgun chasing the other guy and all that stuff. I like the kitchen fight scene.
That was amazing.
I loved every minute of that scene.
Because it seemed like a real fight. It didn't seem overly...
the most brutal fight scene I've seen in some time.
It seemed very real, too.
Yeah, it didn't seem like overly choreographed. It seemed like these two guys were actually fighting.
Yeah.
I mean, for the most part. I mean, as real as I can make it. That's a
great point you bring up. It doesn't seem like... I bet it wasn't choreographed. I bet they told them, just go nuts, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Just pull the, I love when he's pulling the drawers out, you know, trying to block them.
Smashed by that.
Yeah, even that, though, they went overboard. Because he pulls out, like, five drawers. I mean, how many times is this guy going to fall for the same drawer trick?
It seriously,
like, all right, I'm gonna stab you, drawer. Oh shit! Oh, I'm gonna stab you again. Oh shit, drawer. Oh shit, I'm gonna stab you again. Oh no, the drawer. Come on, man. Like, he did it like four times.
I disagree with you. I think it worked.
I don't know, within the
context, it worked.
As far as you saying like you didn't know where this movie was going, dude, I knew where everyone was gonna end up. Like about 45 minutes into the movie, I'm like, that guy's dead. That guy's gonna betray this dude. That guy's fucking gonna die. Like, I'm like, I knew every single thing that was gonna happen. Nothing about this was mysterious to me at all.
I don't know. I might have to disagree. I loved that fight scene. It was brutal. I mean, these two guys are just going at it in a way that, like, one of them has to be the last guy standing. Like, it's not like, oh, you beat me, you can go on. Like, no, if, like, you get away, I'm fucked. So I need to take you down as quickly as I can. But, you know, you're in a very tight space in the kitchen, so there's only, you know, so much you can be. I mean, people are running each other over off, you know, shelves and hitting with drawers and all that.
What do you think about his assertion about the... it's just a game of hide and seek throughout the whole movie.
It is a game of hide and seek throughout the movie. It's a chase.
Yeah, but
it's a very slow chase.
You think it's slow?
No, if you think about it, no one's running in the movie. Basically, right. he's gotta get from point A to point B. And I mean, I used to go clubbing back in the day, and I know how hard it is to move through a club that's, you know, when it's tightly packed. You're like, you know, excuse me, pardon me, move. But, you know, when you don't want to speak and you can't, like, you know, say, so, hey, excuse me, move, you know, whatever, you got to kind of, like, muscle your way through people. People can tend to be dicks and they'll start crowding.
Right.
And they'll do what they can to keep you from getting to where you need to go.
Yeah.
So I thought the scenery was well done.
You know, I thought the score was really good, too. It added tension. But one thing that they did well is what was the score at times was the club music.
Yep.
And I thought the musical choices during when they're on the club floor, part of the building, is the musical choices were great because somehow it worked for that specific scene.
Yeah.
You know, like when he's dancing in that, like, almost like group line dance. Yeah, for
Another Bites of Dust.
Yeah, yeah. For some reason, that song worked for that scene. You know, I thought it was really
that scene was so jarring to me. When I saw that, I was like, what the fuck? They're doing, like, the electric slide or whatever to, like, a Queen song. And I'm like, it just seemed so out of place. Like, this movie was set up as, like, this, like, kind of like maybe... to an extent, similar to, like, Drive, where it's, like, this anti-hero, and even though he's a bad guy and he does bad things, he's trying to redeem himself, you know, with some specific characters throughout the movie. And Drive is so much, like, way better done.
Well, wait a minute. How can you compare this movie to Drive?
It's similar. There's, like, an anti-hero at the
helm. I can see the comparison. You have, like, where Vincent's kind of like the driver. He's not a good guy to be, you know, any stretch of the imagination. And... you know, in Drive, you know, he's trying to protect the kid and the girl.
Yeah, by day he's like helping dudes rob banks or rob places and, like, you know, potentially knowing that they're might kill someone. And then in the same, you know, instance, he's trying to help a family by night. So he's like this anti-hero that's like, he's not really a good guy. He's kind of like ambiguous, where this guy's like straight up bad. And he never, like, even though he's out to rescue his son, he has, like, a familial connection to this guy. It's the only reason he's doing it. Like, if it was, like, just some random person, like his partner or something, I don't think that he would go through with it. He'd be like, fuck that dude.
No, of course. Sleepless night. Of course not. Of course he wouldn't go through this.
But he doesn't know at that point that his partner is backstabbing him. Like, if he was his partner, he'd just be like, yeah, whatever.
You're right. But the stakes in this movie is his son. His son is in danger. His son might die. So that's why he's going to these lengths.
Yeah, I know. Exactly. That's why I said he had the familial connection. But I feel like if it was anybody else, like, he doesn't.
But you can't say that, because that's not what happens in this movie.
Exactly. It's his son. It's the way he ends the movie. He's not. He doesn't, like, do a complete 180. Like, he's the same guy at the end of the movie.
And that's what I think is brilliant about this movie, is because you actually. I think it's left open at the end where you actually don't know. If he was how the movie started, or if actually how, I'm trying not to spoil it, how he claimed it to another officer, you know, what was really happening, or what he was trying to, you know, prove. Yeah, so I thought it was brilliant at the end how it was left open like that. I don't know. I disagree with you.
I thought it was abrupt, and I initially thought, man, Wally's not going to like this when he sees it, because he's always talking about, like, loose ends.
There is a loose end that I'll mention in spoilers, that from watching Hong Kong, like, action movies and police movies, that I was waiting for the payoff for something to happen, and it doesn't happen. Like, huh. it's like when you see, like, a, you know, like, you have a firecracker, and you're like, oh, it's going to blow up, and...
I know what you're talking about.
The wick disappears, and you're like,
What about the bad guys themselves? You know, the drug dealers. What'd you think about them?
Terrible.
What?
The
Which guy? The Italian guy or whatever? Or the fake Italian guy?
The club owner was a dumb villain.
He was hard.
The only guys I was actually would actually be afraid of would be the Corsicans.
Well, okay, there was one really dumb thing he did. I agree with you, and that's opening the door for the group, you know, for the Corsicans, if you will.
That dude is comically stereotypical. Like it was freaking terrible. Like he was like the biggest stereotype bad guy I've ever seen, and he was bad at it.
I disagree.
No, I
you thought he was good? Like, yes. Really good?
I thought him, especially when they combined him with the Corsican drug dealer, I thought they were great together. I thought they were amazing.
I didn't even like the other guy. I thought the other guy was like, he was like a tricky lookalike from fucking, what's that movie? Fucking space movie there with Bruce Willis. I can't even think of the name of it.
Oh, Fifth Element?
Yes, Fifth Element. He looked like Tricky, and I was like, I couldn't get out of my head. I was like, damn, this dude looks like the poor man's Tricky.
That's funny. No, but you have to admit, there was this really tense scene where Vincent tries to give the drug dealer a bag full of flour, and he rigs a zipper so it won't open. That scene was amazing, because it was just so tense. You don't know if he's going to open it, what's going to happen, how he's going
to
get out of this.
He's trying to scare him off before he opens the bag. You know.
All right, I'll give you one reason why that scene's not tense. It happens like what, like 40 minutes into an hour and 43-minute movie?
Okay.
If he opens it right there, the movie's over. Because he's like, oh, you just... These aren't fucking...
No, that's not true.
Of course that's true.
No, if he opens...
If he gets... He's both sides of him, there are guys pointing guns at him.
Yeah,
if this guy finds out that's not drugs, what the fuck do you think he's
going
to do?
The way this movie went, you know, there were so many unpredictable things that something else could have happened. I don't know where this movie...
That's one of those, like, fake tension, Hollywood tension things.
I disagree. Disagree, man. Wow. Was there anything else you guys wanted to get into before we get into spoilers?
No, I'm good for spoilers.
Hermana? You don't care.
I don't care.
All right, spoilers. Okay, so do you really think that Vincent was trying to expose his partner?
No. From the very beginning, I figured Vincent was a bad cop, even though he tries to talk his way out of it when he's talking to the female IA officer that's hunting him down. And at first, I didn't think she was an IA officer. I thought she was just some chick who saw him, like, who knew what was in the bag. Because what was stolen before, like, you know, she could have been one of the operatives for the bad guy. And then she takes the drugs and she's trying to double-cross him. It didn't hit me until later when she meets up with the other cop that she's actually investigating Vincent. And if he's being investigated, he's obviously a dirty cop. If IA is keeping an eye on him. Hmm. You know, there's already that, it's already in the water, so to speak, that they're going to be looking at him. For anything he might be, you know, doing out of line.
So you saw it as kind of an excuse to just get out of his crooked ways. I don't know.
I thought he was trying to avoid being arrested and being stopped from before he can get to, you know, before he can do what he wants.
Right. So, but I don't know. I thought it was left open where you kind of could have believed, well, wait a minute, the way things unfolded and the way things ended, that you're like, well, maybe he was telling the truth. Maybe that really, it really was, he was undercover for that long a time to expose his partner.
Yeah, but if he was, he wouldn't have thrown her around the kitchen fridge like he did during, you know, when he's basically, you know, trying to get her to tell her what's going on. And he has her in the fridge and he's like smashing her up against like, you know, produce and the racks, and he puts her in the hammer lock and starts pulling
isn't
on her
arm. Isn't he trying to have her tell him where the drugs are?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But if he was undercover, he wouldn't need to resort to that level of physical violence with, you know, another police officer. Like, I need to know what these drugs are. Like,
well, why not? Why not? If she completely believes that he is a bad cop and that her boss or partner is investigating him or trying
to... Yeah, do you want to make the situation worse by beating on a colleague?
He's in a desperate situation at that moment. I mean, really desperate. Because of the stakes. The stakes are not only his life, but his son's life.
This is true. But one thing I also keep in mind, too, is throughout the entire movie, Vincent doesn't kill anyone.
Okay.
When he does shoot people, he shoots them only to wound, because he doesn't want, he can't afford to have that on his record. He can't afford to...
Which kind of reinforces my theory that maybe he's undercover.
No, I think he's undercover. I mean, he could easily have a conversation with her in the fridge about what's going on, you know, and
I don't think at that point a conversation would have made her believe otherwise.
But then, you know, throwing her around and putting her in the hammer lock and all that stuff, I'm like, no, you wouldn't have to... if you're trying to be that careful to not kill anyone, then you'd be more careful not to, you know, wail on one of your colleagues.
I'm kind of with Wally. I don't think he was undercover. I mean, if he was undercover, there would have been some other character, like a Martin Sheen in The Departed, that would have known, yes, this guy's really undercover, and he's the only one that knows, or some bullshit like that. And as far as, like, you know, being investigated, I mean, they wouldn't have been investigating him if he was, was undercover. Like, somebody would have known in the department.
Well, I don't know if they would have had to show that, because there were, the amount of characters are very lean in this movie. You know, the main characters, there's not that many. So they don't show many periphery characters at all. So, I mean, I don't
completely disagree with you. I just feel like if that was supposed to be the intent, that yes, he's really undercover, I don't think they did a good job of relaying it.
Because when you find out later during the scene that I say was spoiled by, like, Hong Kong action flicks, is when you find out the IA guy is actually dirty too.
Right.
And he, you know, he shoots the girl in the back, shoots the club owner, and then shoots the driver of the car, puts a seatbelt on, lets the car crash.
Now, what movie did that remind you of?
It could have been
The Dark Knight.
Yeah, The Dark Knight with Two-Face. And so, you know, he gets out and he's like, he's all, you know, fucked up from fighting Vincent, and then a car crash, and I forgot the villain's name. Is he's responsible for all this carnage? And then you hear the door open behind him, and out comes the girl.
Yeah.
And all, like, the Hong Kong action movies that I've seen, he's like, he would just look at her, she'd draw his gun, just shoot him in the face. But in this case, that was the payoff that doesn't happen. I'm like, oh, she's gonna kill him now.
Yeah, well, no. why would she do that in this movie?
Because she knows she tried to kill her.
Well, she automatically knows he's dirty. With the tone of the rest of the movie, which was relatively realistic, a grounded tone, you know, it wouldn't have fit.
That was my missing wick in the firecracker. Like, waiting for it to go off, like, yeah, no. Okay, we're not going to do that.
Well, you're taking your expectations from other genres into this movie.
Exactly. I thought it was going that way, too.
So does that diminish the experience for you?
No, it was one of those things where I go, oh.
Okay. Hermano? Do you have anything else to add?
No, that was probably the last scene that gained my attention was towards the end, the whole car incident with the main character's Vincent. He plants that phone in that female cop's thing and then calls her and, you know, lets her know or lets her listen to some recording. I forget what even happened.
Voicemail.
Yeah, it's like a voicemail or something.
The guy who ran on the raid with him initially.
Yeah, yeah. And
it's on a burner phone.
Yeah, the whole scene with the car crash and stuff like that. And then what I was actually referring to was the way the movie final scenes where, like, you know, Vincent's, we didn't even talk about this, but I hated this throughout the movie, was during the opening of the movie, during that initial action scene, he suffers like a knife wound, and he's dealing with it throughout the entire movie, but not really, because they were very specific to when he would feel the pain of this knife wound or whatever. Cause
when the adrenaline is not flowing through him.
No, not really, because, I mean, they really, they only return to it, like, I think once, like, after he fought, like, that cop, I think, in the kitchen, and, like, I'm like,
He goes back to in the stairwell. He goes back to it when he is in the bathroom again, and he steals the jacket from the guy that's almost about to molest that girl. He changes his jacket. Yeah. So there's several times he goes back to it.
Yeah, several times to like how many times did you say? I think maybe three or four times they went back to it, and I feel like they were trying to set it up as like, man, this guy has so much to deal with. Like, all these things are going against him, and he's also hurt. He's got this knife wound. And blah, blah. Yeah. And I was just like, I didn't care, man. Like, I really didn't care about this dude. Like, I didn't care. They didn't set him up well. He was just a bad guy from beginning to end. Like, he wasn't redeemed. Like, I don't know what the hell they were trying to get across. Like, if they were trying to get across that this guy's a douchebag and he's going to stay a douchebag at the end, then, hey, they succeeded.
I don't think he's a douchebag. I just think he's a man who's caught in an extreme circumstance, and then on top of that, his son is taken. So, I mean, the stakes there are just immediate. And the way they set it up early in the movie, I think that you do care, at the very least, about his relationship with his son.
I don't agree with that at all. I mean, one breakfast scene where the kid asks for milk and he gets powdered milk instead of regular milk.
Plus the scene between him and his ex-wife, you know, talking about their son.
Which was also lame, because all of a sudden you're supposed to be like, oh, this kid, they come to a broken family. Oh, poor kid.
Jesus Christ. Who cares? Wow.
I found the story, it's actually kind of humorous, actually, where he's in the closet and his phone starts ringing and it's his ex-wife asking, like, where the kid is. Like, oh, he's sleeping.
Yeah. Anything else you guys want to add?
I'd just say these villains are not the brightest villains. I've seen.
Do you think many drug dealers are the brightest bulbs?
Well, if you have a nightclub and you've amassed that, you know, that kind of power where you can call the shots, you know, for the underworld for that particular, you know, area, you need at least some sort of street smarts as opposed to, like, I'll just let this guy kind of wander on.
You're right. I agree that was the weakest part where he just let those guys.
We'll be back in 5 minutes. I trust you, buddy. Yeah. I know we have your kid and all that.
And when
that's the whole point. Of course he's going to come back because they have his kid.
Yeah, but, like, I mean, how do you know he's not plotting, like, another way to get, like, all right, I know if I can figure out where the kid is.
Because you have people all over the club keeping an eye out.
But they don't really give you that. Like, there's the right-hand man that's in the room with him. And then they're like, where the hell is he? I don't know. I'll call him. And then he puts it in, ignore. He's not answering his phone. Why is he not answering his phone? He couldn't have left. We still have his kid.
That's right. He couldn't have left because they have his kid. Exactly. Nothing, Hermano?
I thought the bad guys were fucking terrible. I mean, like, that one scene specifically when they're in their little back room or whatever and it's just two of them and somebody's, like, fucking banging the shit out of their door. They don't even bother to look who it is. They just open it. Like, are you fucking kidding me? All the things that have been happening this entire night, someone's violently banging on your door and you just randomly open it and get a gun to your face. Like, how stupid can you be? They don't even have cameras. They don't have a fucking...
Wait, what scene are you talking about? I'm sorry.
Is that where the two Corsicans come back and they're pissed because they realize that they have flour instead of Coke?
Yeah, well, that's the scene that we've been talking about. The camera's right there. They see that they're banging on the door, and that's the scene that I agree that...
These guys have guns in their hand when they're banging on the door. Why let them fucking in? You don't have any...
You're right.
Come on in. You're right. Perfectly...
I agree with you. That is the worst scene of the movie.
Would you like s'mores? We have some.
I just thought that was so cliche. That main bad guy, I couldn't even tell if he was supposed to be French or he's playing an Italian guy. Like,
What does it matter?
It matters because he was comically bad. Like, I don't know what he was trying to do.
As the actor was trying to do?
Yeah.
I didn't think
he was overly threatening. I thought he was like, I'm like, are you a club owner? Or are you some like big shot gangster guy? Like, I thought it was
a sleazy big shot gangster guy. Yeah.
Man, he was really bad at it then because that didn't come across at all. I thought he was just some club owner that had, you know, some connection to these other guys who were the real bad guys, which even I thought those guys were bad as well. The Corsicans or whatever.
Wow. Should we get into grades?
Yeah, why not?
Or was there anything else you got
to say? I just want to talk about the annoying guy in the quiet bar at the club.
Yeah.
I was like, why is this character this? I would just punch him in the face. I was hoping someone was going to knock him out.
That was great because it added this level of annoyance because you know that he doesn't know what this guy's been through, of course.
Yeah, exactly.
So you're just feeling along with Vincent.
Do you see this dog collar? It used to belong to my dog. I'm like, I have more important things than your dog in my mind right now.
Exactly. I thought that was great.
But I also like the how the, you know, the bartender, you know, uses the taser to like threaten him. He's like, what?
Right in the arm.
She goes right down. Yeah. Ah! And then, you know, when he has to rescue his son, he can't kill the thug. Yep. Shoots him right in the foot. He's not gonna chase after you.
Exactly.
And then uses the handcuffs to keep his son to him so they can't steal him again.
I thought that was really interesting.
Well, you know, figure he learned once bitten, twice shy. He had his kid. He's almost out the first time. They grab him and pull him back.
That was a great scene where he just loses his grip on the kid in the middle of the club. I thought that was amazing.
Exactly. I was like, oh, fuck, now he's going to go back and get him again.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But this time he's like, oh, you're not going anywhere, kiddo. Yeah. Not without me.
Yep.
So now I'm ready for grades. I had mentioned that dog collar guy.
Wally?
I'd give it an A.
Hermano?
A D. I'm completely serious.
You cannot be serious with this.
This movie was terrible, dude. I'm not kidding.
Holy shit. How can you justify a D for this movie?
It was bad.
A D?
I also like to mention, too, that I was also impressed by the fact that I found out that the movie was actually shot in several different locations, and it's edited together to make it look like it's one place.
Wow.
Like, they didn't have, like, an actual club that looked like that. They shot those in various locations and then edited all the footage together to make it look like he's running through an entire complete nightclub, which that I think also kind of sells the movie for me a bit. Just because I'm highly impressed with that kind of forethought and, you know, and editing and shooting.
Huh. Well, the fact that I would give it an A+, it gives us an interesting quandary because I just quickly added up and did a little dividing to, so that gives us an 86. So is that a B or a B+?
It's a B.
That's a B?
You don't get to B+ until 87.
87, yeah, so that's a B. God damn you, Hermano.
Look on IMDb right now, because I did, and see what this movie's getting.
You're right. It's 6.6.
Yeah, and what's the Metascore?
75.
C minus or C.
See, 66 now, is like I don't think you can use Metascores and
I think you can
and ratings the same kind of curve as you do letter grades like we do. You know, because honestly, I think if you consider like Rotten Tomatoes, anything like an 85 and above, I think you would have to give an A. That's pretty unanimous praise. That's really high. And anything, I think if like a 50 on Rotten Tomatoes would have to be like a C.
Imagine no, it's an average. Up the Rotten Tomatoes score right now.
It's completely split, 50-50.
No, I don't agree with that. I go, we do grade letter scores. I mean, the equivalent of like a, I mean, like in school, like a 66 is like a D.
Yes.
A 75 is like a C. I'm right there with
Rotten Tomatoes, 96% of critics yes. liked it. And it's between users, it's got about a 70, so it's about a C minus rating for the users, but almost an A plus for the critics.
Critic reviews?
24.
Yeah.
23 fresh and one rotten.
Not there with them.
Wow. So you brought down this grade to a B, Romano.
I had to do it.
A
I didn't
D.
like this. Oh, it was God. Bad, man. I honestly didn't like it at all.
What?
I didn't. Sorry.
Earlier when you were giving hints about this movie, I thought you would give it. You're like, man, it was all right, you know, kind of like a C-ish or B minus.
I was being completely sincere when I said this movie did not deserve a full review.
Holy crap!
I had barely anything to talk about it because I had nothing really good to say. I was like, man, I'm just going to be torching this movie the whole review.
Wow. Well, like I said, it's in my top three of the year, and you know what's in my at least my one of my other movies. Wow. Okay. That does it for this episode of the First Time Watchers podcast, even though Hermano's wrong. You can find us on Facebook by searching First Time Watchers. We post movie news and updates that we think you would be interested in. And you can email us at firsttimewatchers@gmail.com.
And you can also follow us on Twitter at 1sttimewatchers@twitter.com.
And we have a Tumblr page, firsttimewatchers.tumblr.com. Tim was wrong.
Is that like the URL or is that just like an add-on?
Please download our episodes at iTunes and feel free to leave a review. Any feedback is greatly appreciated. And if you have any suggestions for movies for us to watch, please send a tweet, an email, or post on our Facebook page. And stay tuned for our next episode. We will be talking about Cloud Atlas, the newest film by the Wachowskis and Tom Tykwer. Are you excited for that one?
I'm certainly curious about it.
Curious, yeah.
I'm more curious than excited.
Yeah. Romano?
Looking forward to that. Cleanse my palate.
Cleanse your palate. Jesus. Too bad you're wrong.
Well, we're going to have to continue this later on First Time Watchers podcast because we like to watch.
Testing.
way to max the levels there, Tim. Cough up a lung.
I think what you guys seem to forget is that I have these headphones on, and every time you scream into the microphone, my ears hurt.
I haven't screamed in the microphone yet.
So I'm going to take this pen every time you guys yell into it and stab in the leg knees. So you can feel what I'm feeling through my ears.
Why don't you just turn down the volume on the microphone?
I'll share in my pain.
Because I don't want to. I want to be able to hear what we sound like, too.
Oh.
He's professional about this. A very professional thing.
Yeah.
It's a very professional setup we have here.
Yeah, quite professional.
Despite the fact that you're wearing a dog costume.
I'm wearing a what?
these are listeners. Oh. Like, I could tell you. I could tell them you're wearing anything.
Yeah,
Tim's wearing a dog costume a la Willard.
Yes. Or I'm wearing a collar a la...
any of those goth kids out there?
No. What's his face? In Boardwalk Empire. Ah, shit. Damn it. It was a great scene.
Okay, that's enough of this. How do we sound?
Horrible.